On this episode of Still Loading, Elizabeth Seda. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this new episode of the Still Loading Podcast. I am your host, Josh Koval, and today on the show, I have a wonderful guest joining me that I cannot wait to speak to, and I cannot wait for you all to learn about. Joining me today is an actor, an improviser, a voiceover artist, and a comedian. Today on the show, I have Elizabeth Seda. Liz, how are you doing today?
I am great, Josh. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. Other than my daughter having a little bit of a meltdown right before we started recording, other than that, things are going fantastic, so I can't complain.
Good. Yes. Yeah. I mean, you know, they keep us honest, you know, keep us on our toes. So you're ready for anything.
There might be some heavy editing. We will find out. Well, actually, you won't find out. It'll all sound all flawless, I promise, in post. But no, I'm excited to chat with you today, Liz. I've been looking forward to speaking with you. And before we dive into the questions, just so my listeners can get to know you a little bit better. Listeners, Liz here is voicing Riley, the lead from the new Oxenfree game, Oxenfree 2 Lost Signals. She is also Myra in The Evil Within 2. She is also Piper in Brawl Stars and a number of other games. She also does on-camera film work as well as voiceover work for commercials and a myriad of other things. So I'm so excited to talk to you a bit about your new game that just came out, Oxenfree 2 Lost Signals, as well as it was recently announced you do a voice in a new Stargate game, Stargate Timekeeper. So to kick it off, to dive into it, my first question for you is, when voicing Riley, is there any, like, how did you prepare for this game specifically? Was there anything different about this game compared to others that you voiced, or was there any specific challenges that you faced in doing this performance?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, I think one of the, I'm going to say, overall arching challenges of video game acting is that A, you get the script literally right before the session. So preparation is usually not a ton. You kind of get, you know, like, framework of like who this person is. And I sort of had like keywords and whatnot, but it was like, she's my age. She's kind of in the same phase of life, which is such a prevalent kind of theme, like, you know, chapters of life in the game. And like, I sort of went at her as myself and then kind of had to find the emotional journey, like, as we went, because again, you're getting dialogue that's completely in a vacuum. You don't know necessarily what the other characters are saying to you.
Yeah.
And you've got to do each line, because this is branching dialogue as well. So it's like three different, you know, emotions or intention. So my best way of describing my prep is just being completely open to what comes at me, because it literally could be different at, you know, at any moment. But as far as just her voice, I went at it, my voice completely. And then if they were going to wanted to tweak anything, then I'm completely open to that too.
Do you think that your background, because one of the things I mentioned at the top is that you're an improviser. I saw that you worked at, you studied at Second City, and you've been doing improv for a number of years now. Has that helped you in this, not just this role, but in voice acting in general? And if so, which ways has improv helped you prepare for roles, whether, like you said, for this one, immediately in the room when you get the script, or otherwise?
Oh, man, I cannot speak more highly of improv, not even just for actors, like for anybody. It's just such a good, especially I'm kind of a, you know, I'm kind of a shy person in life. So
I can relate to that.
Yeah, it's a great icebreaker just in general. But for acting and voice acting, like across the board, you know, it helps you just think quickly on your feet, be creative, add your own spice to any character. It helps you just add human life to a character. Like, the great thing about working with Night School is that they were so open to my little, you know, bits of spice and seasoning, you know, and allowing just me to be like, you know, like just the little human things that make a character human. And it's not just what's on the page, you know, without going completely off the rails. So I think it helps you just own a character, create a character, because, you know, sometimes you can just kind of go off the page a little bit. And I love improv because it just kind of separates you from the pack. If you can kind of come up with something different than what everybody else is doing, whether you're on camera or behind the mic, it's just invaluable. So I can't recommend it highly enough. And it's helped my comedy, my sense of timing. Timing is so important. And with video games, again, you're getting a lot of things in a vacuum. You kind of have to manufacture your own timing in a way. And so I think just improv training helps with just honing that skill and knowing how to, you know, really capture good timing. So those are some of the highlights, I guess, among others.
Specifically within improv, is there anything that is there any improvisers that you enjoy working with a lot? Because I feel like I'm actually a fan of improv myself. Not only obviously the more commonly known stuff, you know, Whose Line Is It Anyway, but also stuff like I'm a huge fan of Comedy Bang Bang and the improvisers from that podcast and stuff like that. So I'm always curious, like people who do improv, who do you like to work with and what type of improv do you like to do?
Yeah, I I'm in a weekly like workshop kind of workout thing with a group of like older seasoned, like veteran improvisers. These guys and gals have been around for, you know, 40 years, literally. Like some of them are in their 70s and they are so funny and so sharp. And I love working with that kind of older seasoned perspective because I feel like I don't want to bash on the current SNL, but I will because I think it's awful. I'm just horrified. I think it's abysmally bad. And it's getting away from this sort of like group ensemble energy makes improv succeed. You cannot succeed in improv by yourself. And I feel like they've hired a bunch of like singular characters who I don't find funny, but that alone.
I gotcha.
Yeah. So anyway, it's that kind of old school mindset of like, we are a group and we need to finish each other's sentences. And I find older people way funnier than younger people. Maybe that's just me too. But I love working with them. And it just makes my mind work differently, you know, because we're just of a different generation and we have different senses of humor, but also I find I have similar senses of humor in some ways. So I find that really fun and challenging. And I perform with my group, mostly organic in Los Angeles. And we perform with the longest running, improv group off the wall.
Okay.
Yeah, they've been together for 40 years. There have been different iterations, but some of the original members are still there. Robin Williams was in it at one point. John Ritter, Gary Shandling. Like, it's really seen a lot of amazing people.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're just an inspiration and they just rock it out. So I think I like games-based improv more than like long form, just because long form, you kind of get locked into a prompt or whatever. And games, I think I'm a little too maybe ADD for it. so I like changing it up. But I like game-based improv personally. That's just more fun for me.
If I was doing improv, I'd probably be with you on that. I feel like because it allows a little bit more variety to it than I like being able to, it almost feels like you can exercise different muscles then as opposed to just like one for a specific long form scene or play or what have you.
And if you get stuck, you know, whatever, the scene's going to be over in 30 seconds, whatever. Long form, you which is part of the challenge and what really sets people apart. But I think there's something you can play with more characters. There's more to kind of do for me. I don't know. That's just my feeling.
moving back to Oxenfree and Stargate Timekeepers, I was wondering, because they're very different style games in terms of the genre. Oxenfree is kind of a more narrative-based, lots of dialogue, and there's lots of dialogue trees and stuff like that. Sorry. And Stargate Timekeepers is more of a real-time tactics game. So is there any difference for yourself when either, A, you're preparing for, well, like you said, it's hard to prepare for the roles, but when you're performing the roles, is there any difference in how you have to perform them, or is there any difference in terms of the type of work that the game developers ask you to do when you're doing the VO work for it?
Sure. I think the biggest difference is just the fact that, like, with a tactical game like Stargate, or not evil, I won't say evil, evil then, but with Stargate, like, it's, you're doing efforts, you're doing fighting, you know, it's like, you know, screaming, like, it's a lot more vocally stressful. It just is, which isn't bad necessarily. It's just, it can be wearing. And I don't want to say, I just got so spoiled with Oxenfree too, because there's so much just beautiful nuance to the writing and emotional life that they just breathed in, you know, that it is chock full of just good stuff. And so it's kind of hard to, it really is apples and oranges. But yeah, I'm not going to have as many tender emotional moments in Stargate then.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I tried.
You could really put some sadness into those grunts.
Yeah, exactly. I don't want to say it's more one note. I don't want to say that. But I just feel like, you know, tactical games they're made for a more specific reason. And sometimes, you know, the voice acting is not prioritized maybe as much as like a story-based game like Oxenfree. Yeah. And so Oxenfree is just, yeah, it's just a joy to get to work on that. It's, yeah, it's great. They did such a good job.
Within Oxenfree as Riley, do you find how much of yourself ended up being part of the character? Is Riley very similar to you as a person, or did you draw on more influences to kind of craft the character of Riley?
She's not similar to me as far as how she lives her life. You know, a lot of the trauma that she's been through in life. I also just feel like she's a lot kind of more brave and willful maybe than I am. I like to think I'm that way, but in a way I kind of feel like there are parts of her where I'm like, she's like my alter ego. You know, she's what I would aspire to be. She's just like a straight shooter. She can kind of do anything, but she also has a lot of vulnerability, a lot of flaws, which I do too. And we also, I feel like the main like character trait, I think that maybe we share the most, that comes through the most, is that we kind of use humor as a defense mechanism. So that, like, I totally just locked in on, and I really really focused on that a lot. She's pregnant, she's been in the military, these are all things I have not been or done. So just life experience completely different. I've never lived on an island. But as far as just finding her voice itself, the voice is, you know, it's just part of it. But like finding, you know, the emotional life, you know, like any acting exercise, it's just finding what's similar in my life that I can, you know, translate
to the role. I'm always curious about that, because some actors are very much like, well, I'm just acting, I'm not drawing from personal experience, I'm just emoting this. So I'm always curious if depending on how you approach the role, if you're just kind of like, well, I'm acting, or was it more drawing from personal experience? Like you said, you drew from some personal emotions, like similar emotions, in order to bring out the aspects of Riley that aren't part of you, if I'm understanding you correctly.
Yeah, yes, I think,
if that made in any order, sense.
No, I got you. I think I know what you're saying. Yeah, it's important to, in order to find like a truthful, authentic performance, you know, for me, and I'm not, maybe that doesn't make me as good of an actor as other people, but I can't just I need to like draw on something, you know, it needs to come from somewhere to be, I don't know, like real at all. So, even if it's not the same experience, it's really just trying to find those parallels, you know, without, in a healthy way, you know, that's not like, you know, going down.
You don't want to emotionally cripple yourself for the exactly. rest of the day.
Exactly. So, that's always, I think the challenge and the exercise and so that's what I do, to find that sort of truthful voice.
In acting in general, one of the things, so you just kind of, you talking about how you try to find the truthful voice for each character that you perform. And one of the things I enjoyed reading, like doing research in preparation for this episode, was like on your voiceover website, you talk about how much you are committed to each role that you are booked for. And I could actually really feel that even just in the writing of your site, like as you're trying to explain like your process. And one of the things that you mentioned about your process on your site, which I thought was really interesting, was that whether it's an hour long training module or a 30-second commercial spot, at the end of the day, we're still telling a story. So what I wanted to ask kind of in relation to that is, for some of the work that you book, whether it's a commercial spot, whether it's a game, which might be more narratively heavy, but specifically more for things along the lines like a commercial spot or an hour-long training session, how do you as an actor find the story in something that maybe on its surface doesn't really appear to have one, whether, you know, like a 30-second commercial spot or something? How do you go about trying to figure that out?
Yeah, I think like with any job, I really do approach it the same. And for me, telling a story is using my authentic voice to communicate what the script says. And however, so for me, usually that's my conversational, natural, I'm talking to you. I'm actually talking to you, a person, rather than just, okay, let me present this to a sort of this, nebulous, whatever cloud. I really just find that every script has an arc. It has a point, whether it's well-written or not. And I just do everything I can to tell, to read it as naturally and just conversationally and humanly as possible. It sounds really obvious. Amazingly, it's hard. Like some of the tricks I'll do is I'll start talking before the script even starts. Like I'll just start talking and like saying stuff just to like get into the flow, because every script has its own flow, its own rhythm, its own energy. Regardless of the content. So, you know, you just want to like tap into that and make it just sound as easy as possible. And that goes for character work too. You know, it's like, who's this character? What does she want? You know, what are we doing here? So I really, even if that's me being an instructor in a training video, like, hey, welcome to, this hospital's safety course. Like we're here to save your life. So, you know, I think just knowing exactly what it is, the intention is, off the bat, just helps you tell it like a story, because you're getting from point A to point B, and and then the tricks of the trade of just making it sound like a human being.
I gotcha.
Yeah, so that was long-winded.
I've kind of drilled you a little bit on like nitty gritty acting stuff. So I want to kind of go into a little bit more on a personal level. Like, you know, we've already talked a bit about Oxenfree, and we've talked a bit about obviously Stargate Timekeepers. So people go check those out. Of course, we'll shout it out again at the end of the episode. But on a personal level, I kind of want my listeners to get to know more about your journey as an actor so far, and like what you like, where you started and kind of where you've been going. And like, first off, I want to know if IMDb is actually freaky correct or not, because you know, it's a good sometimes it's an accurate repository of information, sometimes not. So it says here you were born in Nashville but grew up in Jersey.
That's right. Yes.
That is right. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, both my parents are from New Jersey. They are New Jersey people through and through. But my dad just had a job in Nashville for like 4 or 5 years, and so I was born there. I've never been back either, which I amazingly like. How have I never been back? So it's on my bucket list. But yeah, my parents moved back to Jersey when I was like one, so I never got the drawl. I never, you know, never set in. my southern roots never got to take. So
I mean, I'm kind of glad for that based off the character that I talked to you off mic about it. And I really correct me if I'm wrong, but the character that I referenced to you before for your YouTube show, the conspiracy show, Conspiracy Cover-Ups, Carmelo Carmichaelangelo. I feel like that's a very Jersey influenced character. Am I correct with that?
Your instincts are spot on, Josh. Yes, that was, she was just an amalgamation of so many people, both imaginary and real. And I just loved playing her so much. Like, I still bring her back in improv sometimes, you know, in different sort of different forms. I can't copy her exactly, but.
Was that show improv or was that scripted?
It was improv. Yes.
That's amazing.
All of my guests were improvisers, or I should say guests. Like, it was a talk show. But
stars,
all the other actors, were improvisers. And we basically just gave everybody a kind of a rough outline of like, this is kind of where the conversation's going to go. But we wanted everybody to kind of make their characters their own and have fun with it. Like, I trust you. Please have fun with this. Like, dig in. This is like who the character is, but make it your own. Go for it. So, we just really wanted to dig into making fun of conspiracy culture and, you know, using some classic, I say classic ones, more well-known ones that aren't totally loony. I love Carmella. Awesome.
I love the whole the prep for the character. Well, the thing that got me, believe it or not, the first thing that made me laugh, besides obviously like the wig that you wear for it, is the ashtray on the table.
I know
that is filled with cigarette butts, like not just like four or five, like 60 stacked on top of each other, straight up, like they're glued together. Yeah. I don't know why. And then, of course, the taxidermy cat on the side.
Roz.
Oh my god, I don't know why I even noticed the cigarettes, but it killed me. I'm like, that's a Jersey. Yep, just
yeah.
Oh yeah. My god, that made me laugh. And then your first guest, I could not remember the actress's name or the character she played, but when she started naming all the cats, they were all just the most absurd, like onion something was
Charlie,
one. And
little Charlie onions.
Little Charlie onions.
Sorry. I still remember these like so well.
Slayed me. I was laughing so hard. Yeah. I listeners, I said it off mic to her as well. I'm going to be watching the rest of these because I was obsessed with I just love the character so much.
Oh, thank you.
Is improv stuff like that stuff you would want to do more of, whether it's for YouTube or whether it's for like some, I don't know, like the kind of the video produced improv, or whether it's on a podcast, even just something that's not stage or theater? Nothing against stage or theater, but just out of curiosity for myself, is that something you would do more of if you had the time to?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. First and foremost, because I hate memorizing stuff. Hate it so much. Like, voiceover has ruined me in that regard. Like, the first big role I ever got was Helena in A Midsummer Night's Dream. Do you have any idea how much text Helena says? She is the biggest role in that whole play. I just like memorized it, boom, boom, but like nothing. Now I'm like, how? Now I'm like, I have an audition and it's got five lines, and I'm like, okay.
That's a lot of lines.
Yeah, like, fuck. So to answer your question, yes. So it's partially out of laziness, but partially just because, I have more fun with it, and I just tend to always do it anyway, even if I'm, you know, if I'm doing a voiceover audition or whatever, it's like, you know, it's not going to hurt. I'll throw it in. And if they say, great, let's stick to the script. It's like, yeah, at least I tried it. But as far as on camera stuff, it's very hard to shoot improvised stuff. Luckily we had three cameras. We were able to just cover everything. We were just funding it ourselves, and
it's an indie production.
Totally. I'm so grateful for all of the indie experience I have, and everybody should go through it if they're in the film and TV industry. But it's hard, and it's very time consuming, and but I loved every second. And yes, if somebody could just write a check every week or month or whatever, I would totally just make whatever. I also have really high standards for myself and for things that I watch. Like I said, the current SNL, even though that's not improv at all, because they're reading off of cue cards the entire time, and I hate
it. Are they actually really?
It's like, why am I here? anyway. I'm going to stop bashing on that. There goes my chances of ever being on. But
Lorne.
Yeah, Lorne. Sorry, I lost my train of thought.
I actually have a follow up question, kind of in the same veins as that. Just to kind of shift gears slightly.
Yeah.
In improv, do you actually, on a personal level, because I feel like it depends on the performer.
Yeah.
Do you find it's easier to do comedy via improv or scripted? For me personally, like I'm not saying I ever could be a performer, but I always like, if someone asks me to read a funny line, it's a lot harder than me just being able to come up with something off the top of my head. You know, so I always feel like, personally, I would feel like that'd be easier, but I'm always curious on an individual basis. Like, do you find it easier to do comedy on improv or via script?
Definitely improv is harder for me. I approach improv like real life. So, you know how even with character, and this is, again, kind of getting into my own acting philosophy, but any character, any scene, it's got to be based in reality. And if it's crazy, that's because, you know, the circumstances are crazy. It's not because you are crazy, you know. And so my, you know, having creating a character and the sort of pressure of doing that, it's fun for me. It's also terrifying, and why I will always be terrified of improv, and why I will continue doing it. Therefore,
it's the good kind of scary.
It is. Yeah.
It kind of keeps you on the edge.
Totally. Yeah. I need that to keep thriving just as it'll keep me alive. Mm-hmm. So when somebody hands me a script, it's like, oh, it's here. Like the pressure's off, and all that just training and practice and experience of so many years, it just kind of, you know, I'm not saying I have it figured out on the first read. I'm not going to, you know, say, oh, I'm the best. But I just find there's a lot more freedom. Ironically, even though, like with improv, anything goes, you can do whatever you want, and that's what's so cool about it. But in my own Liz Seda craziness, I'm like, well, what's the choice? What's the right choice? You know,
you're paralyzed by choice, opposed to having the choice made for you.
Exactly. And so maybe that's why I'm a natural born actor. It's like, take this, read it, you know, it's handed to you, and then I can kind of make it my own. When you have to both build the foundation and the house, it's a lot more daunting versus the foundation's built. Now we could just get to like decorate and, you know, add the character stuff, you know. Writing for me is, and that's why I love doing Carmella, and why it was kind of a fun challenge. And I liked the collaborative part. But, you know, I'm very insecure about my writing and creating. And again, why I think it's important to keep doing it. But that was my original point I was going to make. I have high standards for myself. And so I would never want to just create a bunch of crap and put it out there. I don't know if I could ever be like a TikToker and have to just crank out stuff all the time. I don't know if I could do it.
I feel you on that. Yeah. I couldn't do it. There's always a pressure even amongst podcasters to like put your stuff out there on TikTok, to put your stuff out there on Instagram Reels or Facebook, whatever the fucks, or YouTube, that's the word, or whatever, all the social media stuff. And I'm like, I don't know what to do. Like, I have a hard time enough as it is figuring out what to post daily on Instagram to keep myself active in the algorithm.
Yeah.
But like, that's just posting a picture, let alone trying to do something creative on a daily basis. I mean, hell, even with this show, it's a different version of creativity because it's like the art, I guess the creativity of conversation, I guess, is more what podcasting is. But even for this, like, I'm recording this episode almost a month in advance because I have to like plan stuff out. And if I were doing everything the week of, this show wouldn't survive. In fact, that's actually how I started. I was not weekly when I first started this forever ago because I couldn't think a week at a time like that. Yeah. So to bring it back to what you're saying, I could totally understand what you're saying about how like you have a certain ideal in your head, and if that, like, if the turnaround time does not meet up with the time it's going to take for you to hit that ideal, hit that standard, it's anxiety inducing. It's awful.
Totally. Yeah. And I'm not saying that's a good thing. Like, I wish I could just be like, fuck it, whatever, let's just put it out. And I think that's the artist's struggle. I don't know. You want to, you know, like, what you have to just keep creating and keep producing no matter what. And, you know, fuck your standards sometimes, but I still have them and I still kind of want to I just want to be good. That's all. I just want to be good. And I don't want to put bad stuff out there really at the end of the day. So, yeah, your original question was, do you want to do more rough stuff?
I like these tangents. We can go off on them as much as we want.
Great, because I am the queen of tangents. And there are just so many hours in the day. And I think, you know, we struggle a lot with where do you put your energy and allocating it, you know, responsibly also, but then doing stuff that fills your cup, all that good stuff. So the answer is I have no answers. I don't know.
No, I like kind of this more philosophical take. I like how I started this. I'm like, I'm going to ask you more about yourself in terms of your personal journey. And now we're just going into like content creation philosophies.
Oh, totally,
I have no issue with that. Yeah. I love it. But in speaking of yourself, like I mentioned before, you studied at Second City in Chicago. What was that like? Because that's like considered one of the more, I don't know if legendary is the right term, but it's a very iconic like improv troupe. And listeners, I'm sorry I'm focused so much on improv, but this is like one of my personal favorite things. I'm obsessed with it because I can't do it, and I love listening to improv comedians. So when I get to have one on the show, I'm going to ask a lot of questions about it. So what was it like at Second City? Was it what you expected, or was it, what kind of stuff did you learn from there?
To be honest with you, I enjoyed it. I did it when I was like 21. So I I'd actually just graduated college early because I loved it that much. I enrolled in specifically, I forget what it was called now. It was with a lot of these schools, Groundlings and Second City, and they have like tiered classes basically.
Yeah.
And I specifically didn't want to do that. So I enrolled in the improv for, it was like improv for actors specifically. It was like that.
I see.
Yeah. Which I enjoyed. So again, this was like, cause I'm 39. So this was like 18 years ago. And I felt like, I don't think I let the sort of like prestige of the institute, well, they're crazy, kind of overwhelm me. I think I was like the right amount of naive, where I just kind of like went in and was like, oh, you know, let me just see what this is about, because I knew I had improvised before, but never in any kind of, you know, structured setting. So, I wish I could remember the people. This is not a good anecdote at all, because I just don't, I'm like trying to remember.
No, but what it was actually like. What you're saying here leads me to a different question. You mentioned how it was almost being naive about the quote unquote like prestige of Second City. Do you ever feel like being naive about something can actually be a benefit, like in terms of like not psyching yourself? I'm sure naivety a lot of times is not considered a good thing, but I've heard it from you just there, like you didn't read too far into it. Kevin Smith also talks about how he got into movies because Richard Linklater did Slacker, and he filmed that in Austin, Texas. And Kevin didn't realize that Austin was like a huge film town at the time, and it was like some big city and this and that. He's just like, oh, this is just some guy from like Bumblefuck, Texas. Like, why would, like, if he can make a movie, I can make a movie. So his naivety actually assisted him in making Clerks and doing everything that he ended up doing.
Yeah.
And likewise for you with Second City, you're just like, oh, I want to learn improv. Let me look this up online and see what I can find, type of thing. So like, do you feel like that has, whether it's in Second City or otherwise, has that ever helped you in your career? Like being blissfully unaware of something?
100%, like 1,000,000%. I can't even, talking about anxiety and I have that. I overly calculate. I try to overthink everything. I'm a worrier. I plan everything. Like, God, it drives me insane. And all the best things that have happened to me in life where I've actually moved forward have been when I'm like, fuck it. I'm just going to go do it. Like moving to LA. I came out to LA, small tangent, but I'll get back to Second City.
We can get off of Second City if you want. It's fine. No, this is interesting.
No, I mean, I lived in Chicago because I went to college there. And then I was like, I should check out LA. And I had a friend who lived out here, and I came out for the summer, and he lived like in Venice, you know, and it was like by the beach, and he was a good old friend from high school. So it was like familiarity, safety, you know, bubble, whatever. And I like came here and I took a class because I had to have a purpose. I wasn't just going to like be a beach bum. And I like decided after 3 weeks, I'm like, I'm moving here. Like, that's it. And I called my parents because I do care about what they think. And I got their blessing. I can't believe it, because it's like, what? Like, it was just crazy, but not crazy. At the same time, it just made it felt so right, you know? And that uncalculated decision, you know, I've never looked back. And it really was the difference for me and making me, I wouldn't be here now. Doing what I'm doing if I hadn't done that. I like to think, you know, I would have carved out a nice little career in Chicago, and it's still my favorite city, but man, that was the biggest fuck it I've ever done and said, let's do this. I think with Second City, I always, you know, just being blissfully unaware, I psych myself out. It was always my problem as an athlete, like growing up. I would psych myself out because there's just all these what if scenarios, and if I win this, and you know, and so then you're 10 steps ahead of yourself and you've lost the game or what. I was a tennis player, and so, and you don't have a team to back you up.
Hey, that was also an IMDb. Looks like that was correct too.
yeah. And so I think for me personally, the blissful, unaware, naivete, whether intentional or not, has always benefited me completely. When I just let my foot off the gas and say, I'm going to just try this, I'm just going to do this, it's always, I've never regretted it. So, that's it.
I can relate to that very much. As I told you off mic, I also deal with anxiety. Yep. It is not fun. Oh. The what ifs. It's never ending. It's incessant. Mm-hmm. It's frustrating because you just wish you could turn your brain off sometimes and you can't.
Yep.
It's not fun. So I totally feel you on that.
Yeah.
I want to bring it back a bit to video games because, of course, I'm a gaming podcast. B, your PR company that, you know, like was nice enough to reach out to me. I would assume they would like me to talk about, like, promote the stuff that you're working on and talk about some games and whatnot. So I had a question after I say all that. I'm not even asking a question about Oxenfree or Stargate. I want to ask about Wanderer, the VR game that you did.
Yeah.
I was wondering, did you experience, was there anything different about performing for that since it was in VR? Was it different from other games because it was VR, or was it kind of just run of the, not, I shouldn't say run of the mill, but like, was it kind of more similar than you were expecting it to be?
It was more traditional than I was expecting it to be. I didn't have to, there was no mocap or like anything. I didn't have to, you know, I'm trying to remember, because I did this, I think I did the 2019. Now I'm trying to remember.
The game came out in 2022, which obviously did not do that in 2022. There's a long development timeline, but.
Yes. I do remember doing a session though during COVID. So it must have been, I must have started it in 2020. Anyway, it really was a pretty traditional session. Got on the line with the developers down in New Zealand, great guys. And I was playing Amelia Earhart, so I felt a little like, okay, I've got a.
Was the anxiety in for that one because of the role?
I feel like the anxiety I feel for about voice acting has lessened a ton, just because at this point I've done a lot, and I'm like, okay, I've got this. Even if I'm wrong out of the gate, it's okay. We'll just pivot, and you know, now I just need to translate that to the rest of my life. But as far as just the sort of brass tacks of the recording process, it was very chill, very calm. I didn't, just because it was in VR, that's all tech stuff that was, had nothing to do with me. So I didn't get to play with, you know, syncing up to anything. Yeah.
I gotcha. Yeah. And in terms of your voice work, whether it's for games or otherwise, I know Oxenfree 2 just came out, so this may not quite apply just because it is so recent, but what work do you get most noticed for? Like, is it Brawl Stars, or is it The Evil Within 2, or is it some of the, is it some like in front of camera work, or what are some roles you get most noticed for?
I would say, I mean, the most attention, or just people, you know, following me or checking in, was definitely Brawl Stars. And I was like, what is this game? I had no idea. And then I tried to play it, and I'm like, what? You want to talk about the difference between Stargate and Oxenfree 2, and then Brawl Stars is, it's a whole different, it's an app game, you know, it's I think I say like 20 different things. That's it.
And people recognize you for that's yes. Not trying to sound insulting.
I know.
It seems like small amount of lines.
Yeah. I guess, you know, quality over quantity. It's a very silly game. Thank you, Brawl Stars. They just have a huge following in like Russia and like, it's from really far reaching places. It's an international phenomenon. So probably that, but game wise, I would say probably that. And then now Oxenfree 2. And then, you know, there's some like Evil Within residual stuff. Granted, that game came out, you know, a bit ago. I do a lot of like really small games too that just, you know, come out and people aren't gonna, they're probably not gonna know, but I don't really care. I'm like, I love
that.
Sorry.
No, just finish what you're saying. I cut you off.
I mean, I love to work. Like I was saying, I approach every job the same, even if it's a small in-app game. Like I will voice the crap out of that. Like I have so much fun with it. So it really doesn't matter if it's a huge game or a little game. I'm gonna have fun. So whether people play it or know me from it or not is totally just icing on the cake.
The thing that stuck out to me, you're talking about small little games. There was a game called Broken Lines that you did the voice of Rosie for that I saw.
Yeah.
I've never even played it before, but I hadn't heard of it, but I looked it up. It's got really good, surprisingly good ratings for something I never heard of before. Yeah. And it's a narrative driven tactical RPG, which I was very pleasant. Like I wasn't expecting, because the artwork on IMDb looks like a mobile game, which no offense to mobile game players, but those are usually generally they're not narrative heavy. Not all. Some of them are. I'm actually covering a game for a friend's show that was very narrative driven. That was a mobile game, but generally you don't see that. So when I saw the art, I'm like, oh, I wonder what game this is. I was curious. Broken Lines. I see like it's got an interesting cartoony look, and it's a narrative driven game about the darkest hours of World War II. So I was very surprised to see that. I actually kind of want to try it out and check it out. Listeners, it's 80% off on Steam right now. So,
oh my God. Yeah. I usually don't play the games that I'm in. I have played most of Oxenfree 2, and I've played Brawl Stars. I don't know. It's part of it. And that's just that thing. Like, do you watch yourself on film? It's like, I'd really rather not. I'm just going to let it be. And it's
fine. I totally understand.
I remember doing Broken Lines. I remember I was on vacation in Australia, believe it or not. My husband's an orchestra conductor and was doing shows down in Australia. And
That's awesome.
Yeah, so I just I tagged along, and
why not? You get to go to Australia.
I was like, I'm never going to go. And I remember being like, I make pillow forts if I have to travel and record. And I remember, I think that's when I did Rosie from Broken Lines. I'm like 99% sure that's when I did that.
That's so cool.
She was born in a pillow fort in a hotel in Australia.
That sounds like a band name. Born in a pillow fort.
Born in a pillow fort, yeah.
That is like my go-to old quote. I don't know if it's an old man joke, but people have told me before that's an old man style joke, but God damn it, I'm sticking to it. That was my high school band's name. That's my go-to. It's my go-to joke.
I love it.
And speaking of mentioning that you haven't played many of your own games, I saw on your YouTube channel you started a short-lived series called Liz Plays Games, because you say famously you don't really play all that many games. I enjoyed your editing on your announcement too, where you had your cat next to you. Your cat's name was Penny, who you lovingly call Anubis, but you're not sure why. that, once again, just those small lines are sticking out to me. That made me chuckle. I haven't been able to watch any of many of those. I watched the trailer, but I didn't get to watch any of the videos. But from what I could see, I saw you tried out Doom and I guess Five Nights at Freddy's and maybe Star Fox. There we go.
Yes.
Have you played more since this series? That was a couple of years ago, and obviously life has gone on, but do you continue to play games, or is it still kind of something where you dabble in it, you enjoy it here and there, that kind of thing?
Yeah, it really is more of a dabbler thing. I would like to continue the series, I think. It was just, we ended up moving. You know, it was like life, like you said, life happened. And I had fun doing it. I don't have any pride in it, and like I'm bad, and so you know a video
nothing wrong with that. That's what's fun,
being terrible. Let's just capitalize on that irony, I guess. I think just because I spend my entire day in front of a screen, I guess my bandwidth is kind of I'll play.
You're kind of like almost mentally fried from screen time.
Kind of, yeah. I like it. That's just how I'm built. Like many people are stronger than I. So the first thing I usually want to do is just like get away from screens. I totally get it as like a stress reliever. Like totally makes sense. It's just not my my first choice, but I will totally dabble if other people are playing. Like I'll get in there. Every Christmas we play GoldenEye, like old school pixelated GoldenEye and like Mario Kart. Like I love all that crap. And
N64, man, that was my first console. That's one of my personal favorites.
Yeah, it's just fun. I'm not as adventurous with the new stuff as I probably should be.
It's fine. I feel like there's an unnecessary pressure on voice actors to play games when it's like, if it's not your, just because you enjoy acting doesn't mean you're going to necessarily enjoy the medium and I'm not trying to put words in her mouth here, listeners. If she has said she likes games, she doesn't have time, so don't be angry.
No, please don't. I respect it, and it's like, and I'm terrible at it, so I'm owning that.
Okay. I actually don't have too many more questions for you, so there we go, we're actually keeping to about an hour just like we asked for. So I only have a few more questions for you for this episode. I end kind of my interviews. I haven't been able to end the interviews the way I've wanted to for a while now. So I'm excited to do that with you again. Two questions to wrap up the show. One is a question that I kind of steal from Alan Alda. Alan Alda has a wonderful podcast called Clear and Vivid. Listeners, go check it out. And the other one is a question from my wife, who is famously not into games, not into any of the geeky stuff I'm into, anime, video games, and movie and manga and all that good stuff. So I always ask her for a question as well for my guests, who she knows nothing about their work, which I think is kind of interesting. It makes the questions a little bit fun.
I love that.
So the question from Alan Alda's podcast, his whole podcast is about communication, how the science of communication and how we communicate to each other. And so he always ends his show with seven quick questions that invite seven quick answers, or that they want them to answer quickly. Yeah. We don't have to answer this quickly, and nor am I going to not only that, I'm not going to ask you all seven questions. I only pick one. And it's my favorite one. So that question is, what do you wish you really understood?
I wish I understood, trying to make it as personal as possible and not just generic. It's like,
you can answer it literally any way you
like. I'm not going to overthink it. I just wish I understood how to be content. Like, not happy necessarily, because I don't think that's a real, like, I don't know. I don't know if that's a real thing. But, like, I just wish I understood how to be content no matter what. Like, I have moments of it. But, like,
yeah.
I just, I don't want it to seem like I'm being generic.
I can understand. No, that's not a generic answer. Did you, I can understand what you're saying, where it feels like content and happiness are a different thing. Yes. Content, mm-hmm. like you can be happy and not feel content. Generally, when you are content, you are happy generally.
Right.
But
right.
you can still feel happy without being like, I could have eaten half of an ice cream mm-hmm. and be really happy, but I'm not content because I didn't get that other half of the ice cream. And yeah. I can kind of see what you're saying. Like, wanting to feel content isn't necessarily greedy. It can come across that way to some people, I feel like. Like, oh, right. you're just still not content? No. That's a very... You were worried if that was a very like canned type of answer. That is like, that's a deep answer. I haven't heard anyone answer it that way before.
Okay.
You just want to know how to, you wish you understood how to feel content. Like that's tough.
Yeah. And I mean, and I do mean that in every circumstance, like when things are bad, how do you feel? And maybe is it like, is a sense of peace? Is that more like,
that might be like a sense of calm or something?
Yes. How do I just find, I wish I understood where my calm center was. Yeah. But yeah, I think it's tied to contentedness and just a sense of peace, because everything is crazy all the time. It's everything, everywhere, all at once, you know, all the mm-hmm. time. And so it's never going to subside. So like, I wish I understood that part. And I practice yoga and I do all these things and I go to therapy and, you know, so I'm a work in progress, but that's, you know, that's the mountain that I continue
I getcha,
to
I getcha.
to go up.
That's a good answer. So what I like about that question, and I say this every episode I ask it, so listeners may have probably heard this a bunch of times, but I don't care. I find it interesting.
Yeah.
Is that it's so open-ended, because some totally. People, like, yeah. The first thing I thought of was, I wish I understood music theory. I just wish I understood, you know, like, I just wish I understood how music theory works. I find it interesting. I wish I understood language, mm-hmm. like how to speak another language.
Yeah.
And then other people, and it's the same thing on Alan Alda's podcast, where some people answer it like the way I did, kind of a very straightforward, like, mm-hmm. I wish I had this type of thing. I wish I understood this. And you took a very philosophical twist to it, where it's like, I wish I understood kind of, how to be content, how to find your calm, as you put it. I think that's a good way to describe it, how to find your calm.
Yeah.
And I like that.
Yeah,
that's getting me thinking. That's why I asked the question. Like, that's getting me thinking.
It's on my mind, like, daily. At some point daily, it's on my mind. So it's like, I guess that makes sense. I guess on a straightforward answer, I wish I understood dialects. Just that's my, like, I am fascinated.
On a less serious answer, you wish you understood dialects.
That's my straight, yeah. So, but I'm just like in awe of people who can just know that. Like, they just understand how the tongue and the mouth and everything. It's just fascinating. Anyway, okay.
I can't do accents, period. It's a sister of dialects, but yeah, it's like, I can't do... Yeah. That at all. Like, my brother, he's an actor. He can do some dialects and some accents and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But if you ask me to do like an English accent or an Australian accent, oh God, it's awful. It is borderline like problematic, because it's like offensively stereotypical.
Yeah. Like, just, yeah. I'm gonna
it's not good. So I'm with you on that as well. I wish I understood dialects. You know who's a really I don't know if he's actually really good at it, but it fools me, a dumb American. Andy Daly, the improviser, Andy Daly. If you ever listen to any of his stuff, he does really good voices.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
He's really funny.
Yeah.
All right. My final question for you.
Yeah.
And then we'll go into some, you know, once again, shouting out everything we mentioned before. But my final question for you before we go into plugs and all that good stuff, this is questions from Courtney. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. Questions from Courtney. and this actually kind of goes well into your response of, like, you wish you understood how to find your calm or feel content. Yes. What is something that will instantly make your day?
This is going to sound so, no, I'm not going to qualify it. Okay.
I qualify stuff all the time. I understand the tendency.
Yeah. My cat, when she flops and when I like, my cat is the cutest fucking thing. And let me just say quickly, viewers, if you're like, oh my God, cat lady. I did not like cats for most of my life until I met my husband.
This is Anubis, right?
Anubis. Anubis was her, like, yeah. And her name is Penny. But yeah, she's got so many nicknames now. I would die for her. I love her. And when she flops, I just giggle inwardly and outwardly, and that's all it takes. That's all it takes.
That's all you need, man. I love that. It's the simple things.
Yeah.
For me, this is going to be really fucking cheesy. You were worried about qualifiers on yours. I literally was driving home today with the biggest smile. I'm like, I get to see my daughter today. I get to see my daughter when I get home. Yes. I'm like, when did I become the stereotypical dad? I'm going to be that annoying dude who shows up at parties, be like, here's the recent pictures of her.
Yeah. And I got to go. I got to go, because I want to go home and hang out with her. So peace out, guys. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a great problem.
And actually, I do have one more question from Courtney, just because one thing I love about my wife is that she asks questions. Like, that one was a pretty good one, but sometimes she asks questions. I'm like, I don't know why anyone would ask this in an interview, but that's why I kind of want to. What's your favorite smell?
Oh, I think my favorite smell, where you're just like, yeah, where you actually are like, because in Chicago, there was a Ghirardelli factory And you'd walk down the street and it was like, but it was like that rich, dark chocolate smell that's just like in, goes into your bone. Not milk, not sweet milk chocolate. I don't actually like milk chocolate, but that like rich, dark chocolate, like where it's like in the air. That's probably my favorite smell. That will make me go, where, you know, and it's a little bit like gives you a little bit of a high, whether you can drink it or not or eat it or not. I love like a really like dark, dark chocolate, like hot chocolate, like that kind of that smell. That's a good
for question. Myself. It would probably be coffee. I'm not even a coffee fan. Like I like lattes and stuff, but if you ask me to just drink up like straight coffee, even with just like milk and sugar or cream and sugar, not my favorite, but the smell of coffee, I always love it.
It's incredible.
Fun fact, what I usually do, because I'm not, like I said, I'm kind of a wimp and I don't like just straight up coffee. I put hot chocolate mix into my coffee to kind of make like a mocha.
Yeah, I used to do that.
Like a hazelnut coffee with like hot chocolate mix. So you get a little, you get a mocha out of that. That's really good.
You're winning.
And depending on what kind of hot chocolate mix you use, it might be a lot, it might be a little bit too much sugar, but it tastes good.
I get the, like the Dutch chocolate, the droste, it's like in, it is like real chocolate and you add some sugar to it.
Okay.
And I can't ever go back. Everything tastes like fake to me after that. It's like, droste, however you say it.
Have to check that out because I've been ruined by Swiss Miss, I guess. And by ruined, I mean, I'm just used to the cheap stuff.
Yeah, exactly. I know. And sometimes it'll take care of things in a pinch. But now I'm like, everything just tastes like cardboard now by comparison. It's just, And you can control how much sugar you put in because I like it dark without too much. I like a little sweet, but not too.
So you're actually healthier than I am. I just you know how some people will try to cut drinking soda with like fizzy water or like carbonated water because it's the fizz.
Nope.
I need, it's the sugar.
You need the sugar.
It's not the fizz that does it for me. It's the sweetness. It's awful.
Yep. That makes sense. Yep. You're not so alone. Bad. Yeah.
But all right, let's wrap up this episode. Liz, thank you once again for joining me. This has been a lot of fun. I've enjoyed talking to you. I said it already. I'm so sorry for all the distractions. My daughter was having a couple meltdowns mid recording. It was a great time. Everyone had a good time. I promise.
She's hopefully fast asleep and happy now. Yeah, now I know.
God, I hope so. But no, thank you so much for joining me. This was a lot of fun. The new games that one game recently came out, and I believe Stargate's coming out soon. Oxenfree 2. Is there anything, any final words you'd like to say to kind of pitch this to my listeners? Like what should they look for with Oxenfree 2, and what personally made you excited about voicing Riley to kind of pitch this to my audience?
It's a beautiful game, like visually, auditorially. Is that a word? I should know if that's a word, because I'm a voice actor. It's rich storytelling. It's great characters. It's funny. It's poignant. It kind of applies to everybody. So if you just like a good, simple story that isn't a strategic first-person shooter, action bang-bang, this is a great game. And it's only rated T for teen, so it's a little spooky, but it's not like it's not a kid's game, but it's not, you know, it just applies to so many people. And I think it really resonates with a lot of people, and I'm super proud of it. And I think you'll love it. That's it.
I'm very much looking forward to playing it because I own Oxenfree 1. Yeah. I just have not gotten it's in my backlog.
Yeah.
But I promise after this episode, I'll make it a point to play not only that, but also the new one, which is starring you, which I'm so excited to try out.
Yes, please.
And then obviously you're in Stargate Timekeepers. So that I don't think has been released yet, but it's coming out soon.
It is imminent. Yeah, I'm also in the dark on that. But I kept hearing like July, like this month, it was coming out, or at least the beta version was. Of course, we voice actors are often like the last people to hear what's going on. So, but it's imminent. So just keep your eyes and ears peeled and it'll be out soon. I promise. I'll make a call.
Get your shit together. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. And that's more just more like tactical, high energy. You know, if you love Stargate, you know, it's and you know, space and sci-fi and all that good stuff. It's a fun game for sure.
Where can the good people find you online? Is there any social media that you want to shout out for them to follow you over there, or anything else you want to promote?
Sure. I'm not all over the socials, but I am mostly on Instagram, Liz Seda. I'm on Twitter, even though I don't really post. What is it? X Twitter?
Don't go there.
Yeah, but I'm not on TikTok. And then my YouTube channel is just at.
Go check out her YouTube channel. At Elizabeth Seda is the at for that. I know I talked about it a ton in an episode that's supposed to be promoting your new games, but I really enjoyed Conspiracy Cover-Ups.
Thank you. That really warms my heart. Thank you for watching. And it's a fun little show. It's funny, so don't take it seriously, people, because we had a lot of people be like, is this real? And it's like, are you kidding me?
The first episode is called it's a human alien hybrid program, and you have even the joke of 50 Shades of Gray Aliens or something as like the title of it. Like, I don't know how people could take it seriously.
You know what, Josh? It's amazing. It's amazing what people.
The internet's a wondrous and disastrous place all at the same time.
Yeah, it really is. Anyway, yeah. But I really means a lot. You check that out. Thank you.
No problem. I'm looking forward to watching more. But as usual for myself, listeners, you can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and it's Twitter still. Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at @StillLoadingPod on all of them. Also, YouTube at @StillLoadingPodcast, though it's just thumbnails and audio of the episodes. You can also find me on Twitch at @StillLoadingPod, Blue Sky at @StillLoadingPod. There's so many freaking socials now. Everywhere at @StillLoadingPod, but at @StillLoadingPodcast on YouTube. There we go. If you want to support the show, you can do it in a number of ways. You can give it a 5-star rating or review on Apple Podcasts or whichever podcasting app you use, because that makes me feel warm and fuzzy. And if it's to be true, it pleases the algorithm gods with your review prayers. I don't know what religious allegory analogy I'm going with anymore. But either way, it makes me feel warm and fuzzy. So please do so. If you want to support the show monetarily, you can go to patreon.com/stillloadingpod. For $1 a month, you'll get all the episodes a few days earlier at better audio quality, as well as patron voting rights, where you can help me pick future games and topics to cover on the show. For $4 a month, you'll get everything at the $1 tier, plus access to 2 bonus episodes every month, which covers a variety of things, retro magazine reviews, music compilations, all that good stuff. And for $5 a month, you'll get everything at the previous 2 tiers, plus access to Still Bonding, my James Bond podcast, where me and a bunch of friends bond over 007. As I've said a bunch of times, each episode is 2.5 to 3 hours long, so it's a lot of content for y'all. $5 a month, patreon.com/stillloadingpod. But of course, my final shout out is the Bit by Bit Foundation. The Bit by Bit Foundation is a nonprofit organization who puts video games and video game consoles in the hands of kids receiving inpatient care at hospitals. They donate the systems to the hospital, so while the kids are receiving their care, they can do something to pass their time. So check out bitbybitfoundation.org to consider donating. That is all the time I have for you today. Liz, thank you once again for joining me.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you again. This was really fun and just a great way to end my day. So I appreciate it.
I'm glad that you had a good time. And I hope if you would ever want to, I would love to have you back on to bullshit about more improv in video games. So
anytime. I could talk about it, you know, ad nauseum. So anytime, reach out. Happy to.
Awesome. Well, thank you all for listening, and I will see you all next time.